What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The search for six missing people continues in Baltimore after a major bridge collapse.
People in the area are just completely in awe of this image, which is a bridge, a major bridge, effectively severed. It went from a major artery, a federal interstate, to a literal bridge to nowhere.
And what is a supermarket? Federal regulators disagree with Kroger and Albertsons. Plus, shares of Donald Trump's Truth Social surge in its first day of trading. It's Tuesday, March 26th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. In Baltimore, rescue workers are searching for six people who are still unaccounted for after the collapse of a vital bridge at one of America's biggest ports. The Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed after it was struck by a Singaporean ship. The ship's lights could be seen going dark, coming on, and then going out again before it hit a bridge support column around 1:30 this morning Eastern Time. President Biden called the bridge collapse a terrible accident and said the federal government would pay for the entire cost of reconstruction. Reporter Ryan Barber is on the north side of the bridge and joins me now with more. Welcome, Ryan, and thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ryan, what is happening at the location where you are at right now?
For hours now, a collection of state, local, and federal agencies have really converged on the site where this 95,000-ton container ship rammed into a support pillar of a really crucial bridge near Baltimore, a crucial artery for traffic in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, also a crucial spot for shipping. This is a ship that was leaving a nearby port. And really, the focus has been for the past several hours on six people who remain unaccounted for in the aftermath of this real tragedy. One person was hospitalized. Another person did not need hospitalization. They've continued to search through the day for a half dozen people believed to be construction workers who were on the bridge at the time.
For those of us who saw the video of this accident, it's pretty extraordinary and scary. What did it look like when you got to the scene today?
So the first thing I noticed as I was arriving on the scene was actually something really at a distance from the scene, which was a number of cars pulled over, people in the area who are residents or visiting, who, of course, saw the news and are just completely in awe of this image, which is a bridge, a major bridge, effectively severed. It went from, as I said, a major artery, a federal interstate, to a literal bridge to nowhere. To see it in person, it almost conjures an image of, not to make light of this terrible tragedy, but something you'd see of an action movie. It really is a striking visual to see, even at this distance that we are.
Ryan, what have we learned in the past several hours about how this accident happened?
So what we've heard is that at about 1:30 a.m., this container ship named the Dali, spelled like Salvador Dali, which is registered in Singapore, was having propulsion problems that seemed to stem from some power outages. So they called in a mayday, which the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore, credited with allowing authorities to at least minimize the number of casualties related to this incident, shut down car traffic that otherwise would have been happening even in these early hours. However, as I mentioned, the construction workers were still on the bridge, and some of them appear to have fallen into this river with the steel wreckage of the bridge. The National Transportation Safety Board is on the scene and investigating. The head of that agency just spoke with reporters and said that their investigation has certainly begun. She's been in touch with her Singaporean counterpart, but the priority today in these initial hours has continued to be on the recovery of these six people, less so than a full examination of why this happened.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ryan Barber. The Supreme Court appears unlikely to reimpose special restrictions on the abortion pill mifepristone after hearing arguments earlier today. The case is the first major abortion issue to reach the high court after it overruled Roe v. Wade 2 years ago. Our Supreme Court correspondent Jess Braven has more.
It seemed that for most of the court, there just wasn't enough of a hook by these plaintiffs to get this issue into the federal judiciary. There are a group of doctors who oppose abortion They speculate that they could someday have to work in an emergency room where a woman suffering complications from using mifepristone shows up and they have no choice but to help complete an abortion which violates their conscience. This sort of string of hypotheticals seemed a bit too far for many of the justices because under a constitutional doctrine, there has to be a concrete injury that a court can redress. It can't just be you oppose a particular government policy. Courts aren't supposed to be making laws or making policy in that way. So that's really, I think, what was the problem, not just for liberal justices, but also for even some of the conservatives who voted to overrule Roe v. Wade in 2022. So nothing is going to change until the Supreme Court rules early summer, probably by the end of June.
The Supreme Court will also hear a separate case on abortion. Idaho has challenged federal regulations that require hospitals funded by Medicare to provide abortions when necessary to stabilize a patient during a medical emergency. Oral arguments are expected next month, and a decision in that case is likely before July. Coming up, a $20 billion merger between Kroger and Albertsons hinges on a key question. What is a supermarket? We'll explain after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Is Walmart a supermarket? The answer to that question could sink a $20 billion merger between Kroger and Albertsons in what would be the biggest ever supermarket merger deal. The two argue the market has become increasingly competitive as players like Walmart and Amazon move into the grocery space. But as we told you last month, federal antitrust enforcers have sued to block the deal. And part of that has to do with how they define what a supermarket is. Joining me now to explain is our agriculture business reporter, Patrick Thomas. Welcome back, Patrick.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, Patrick, if I go to, say, a Walmart or a Target, I'm not sure I say or even think necessarily that I went to a supermarket, but that's really what's at the heart of this debate, how we define supermarkets, because that relates to the competition Kroger and Albertsons are facing. So what is a supermarket according to the FTC?
So it's a really interesting question because the FTC doesn't count a Walmart, a Target. They're considered retailers that happen to sell groceries. They're not considered supermarkets by definition, this kind of one-stop shop of, hey, you can get everything you'll possibly need for your food needs. Those are typically looked at as at a supermarket, your Kroger or your Albertsons. The FTC says a Walmart is more of a retailer. It sells clothing, it sells toys, it sells everything else, and is more limited in terms of its grocery selections and is not a true supermarket by definition. And same with Target. The smaller guys are called limited assortment stores. It's kind of a wonky term for these smaller discount players. So think of your Trader Joe's, your Aldi's, those kind of stores. And those have typically not been considered supermarkets because they're too limited in what they sell and may not cover kind of the one-stop shop. You can get everything you need under this one roof. So they're not typically classified as supermarkets.
Kroger and Albertsons obviously see this differently. What is their argument?
They see this very differently. They see this as the complete reverse, saying there is more competition than there has ever been in the grocery space. These limited assortment stores like Aldi and Trader Joe's have taken off. You have Whole Foods now, and dollar stores are offering more food. Walmart, keep in mind, actually makes up about 30% of grocery sales in the United States. And if Kroger and Albertsons combined, they would make up about half of that, so 15 to 16%. And that's kind of their argument, saying that there's so much competition from all of these different stores. It's not like the 1960s when everybody just shopped at their neighborhood supermarket and called it a day. The FTC doesn't necessarily agree with that, and that's the court fight we're setting up on. Is there more competition that regulators are not accounting for? It should also be noted that one other thing regulators are arguing is that just the combined power, even if you included Walmart, the combined power of Kroger and Albertsons is still too much in some markets.
Regardless of what each side argues, the market has changed, right, Patrick? It seems there are obviously a lot more players in this space.
Yeah, there are a lot more players. According to food industry trade group FMI, consumers typically shop at around 5 different grocery stores a month and 3 different stores a week. And even more recently, you know, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence from consumers that are interested in discount stores like Aldi. Or maybe they're comparing prices. So that's some of the consumer behavior we're seeing right now, and that the stores would argue makes more competition.
Right, bargain hunting.
Exactly.
So Patrick, what is next for this deal? What should we be looking ahead to?
Well, it's up to a federal judge in Oregon right now for the FTC's case, and that hearing won't happen until August. So right now, both sides are just kind of preparing their arguments and are getting ready to battle these out in court. So this fall, we'll hear the merits of what is a supermarket debated in court.
That's Wall Street Journal agriculture business reporter Patrick Thomas. Shares of Donald Trump's social media company surged 16% on their first day of trading today, raising its market value to roughly $8 billion. Shares climbed as much as 59% after the opening bell, and trading was so intense, NASDAQ temporarily halted it. After a wild trading session, shares ultimately settled well below their peak. Trump owns a roughly $4.5 billion stake in the company. Though it's unclear when he'll be able to tap into that money, the timing couldn't be better for the former president. Yesterday, a judge ruled that Trump can pay $175 million to put his $454 million civil fraud judgment on hold during his appeal. Trump hasn't been able to get a bond to cover the whole judgment. Visa and MasterCard, along with the biggest U.S. credit card issuing banks, have agreed to a settlement with merchants that have been suing them for nearly 2 decades over the fees they charge for swiping credit cards. The fees average around 2%. The deal would lower the rates by 0.04 percentage points and keep them there for 5 years. The legal team that struck the deal for the merchants said it would amount to eliminating $30 billion in fees over that period. The settlement requires approval from a federal judge in Brooklyn, New York. And finally, the acronym DINK, which stands for Dual Income, No Kids, isn't new slang. But lately, childless couples with money to spare are talking about it a lot more on social media. Videos touting the DINK life now rack up millions of views on TikTok and Instagram. And the number of DINKs is growing, too. In a 2021 Pew survey, 44% of non-parenting adults under 50 said they were not likely to ever have kids. That's up from 37% just 3 years earlier. Wall Street Journal senior platform editor Julia Munslow dug into how DINKs are embracing the lifestyle on social media.
In these videos, we're seeing DINK couples sort of go back and forth, where one of them will talk about one of the perks and say, you know, we're DINKs. Of course, we get to travel every month. A lot of them are just sending that message that they don't have kids yet, so please stop asking. They possibly never will, although some of them are open to it. And because of all of that, their life is pretty fantastic. One psychology professor that I spoke to actually said that while it used to be sort of a more taboo topic, as more DINKs come forward on social media, it's sort of that other DINKs are feeling safer, there's safety in numbers, and so they're coming forward to talk about it as well.
Under this expanded lexicon, I'm apparently a SINK, that's single income, no kids. Some of you may be, and this is not an insult, DINKWAD, or DINK with a dog, or even DINKY, that's for dual income, no kids, yet. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Anthony Bansi, with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at viking.com.